Joining us now on the Shell Penzo Performance Line from the undefeated, it's Justin Tinsley. Justin, thanks for the time.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Well, there's a lot of stuff to talk to you about, but I wanted to start with, you know, on Friday we're recognizing on our network and our radio air a celebration and an educational opportunity surrounding Juneteenth, which a lot of people don't know much about. And the NFL has made it officially a holiday. A lot of places have elected not to have work in order to observe it. Can you give us more of a background for those who don't know what it is or why maybe this year it's taken on a special prominence?
Well, it's taken on a special prominence this year, just given the state of the country in terms of social unrest. And I remember learning about Juneteenth when I was younger, and I always thought it was wild that it was 1865 when slaves told they were free, when in actuality, you know, the Emancipation Proclamation happened in 1863. But, you know, it's also not surprising that it's taken for 2020 to happen, that this country is really learning about what this history actually is, because a lot of Black history is suppressed. I mean, I look at stuff like this. You know, we were taught in school that George Washington had wooden teeth, when in reality, those teeth were actually pulled out of slaves' mouth. You know, I think of that. I think of the Tulsa race riots and how that's getting a lot more attention this year. Of course, with the news just recently that Russell Westbrook and Stanley Roberts will be producing a documentary about it. And of course, HBO's The Watchmen talked about that. And I think about other stuff that's not really buried in history, but it's not really talked about a lot. I think about the Tuskegee experiment the same way I think about Juneteenth, and just wait till, you know, that country, not that country, but this country really understands that and understands the horror and pain behind that. And I think once this country really understands its full history, then we'll really begin to understand why people like Ali boycotted the war, Kaepernick took a knee during that season. And, you know, Juneteenth is a buzzword now, and I think it's great that a lot of companies are recognizing it's a holiday, and maybe soon it'll be a national holiday. But just because it's something that everybody knows now, I want that doesn't mean that the injustices that brought about this day suddenly go away. There's a lot more work to do.
Yeah, Justin, there's a lot more work to do, which leads me to talking about our athletes in today's climate and what they're doing with their leagues. Kyrie Irving, what he's attempting to do with the NBA, but just athletes, especially Black athletes, doing their part, understanding their platforms. When you mention a Muhammad Ali, when we go back just a few years to Colin Kaepernick and the influence that and impact he's made to this point, how do you view our athletes today and maybe even going into Kyrie, understanding what he's trying to do?
When I look at Kyrie, he's trying to make the right decision in the moment. And I don't think anybody could be mad at him for that. Now, you can go about the statements that have come out in the media or what's being reported, but I think Kyrie understands the importance of this moment. And in some way, in his own way, he wants to be on the right side of history. Now, whether he's going about it the right way, that's, you know, up for you to decide personally. But I look at it as a lot of times we look to these athletes, Black athletes, in particular the athletes in the NBA, because they have been so outspoken over the years, and I think that it's great. But I also look at it as this would be a great time for the front offices in the NBA, the majority of which, you know, are white, to offer suggestions as well, because the league, as progressive as it is, benefits so much from the talent that we see on the court, but that those front offices, for the most part, I'm not saying everybody, but the front offices, for the most part, they're rarely vocal, you know, when it comes time to address these same issues that the entire world looks for the players to speak on. So I think while it's great what, you know, Kyrie speaking up for himself and other NBA players are voicing their opinion, but I think that, again, going back to the answer before, there's still a lot more work to do.
It's Spain and Company, Sarah Spain, Jordan Cornette. You're right. We talk about the progressive nature of the league, but really don't hear from the people above. Same way we don't really ask prominent white athletes to speak about opioid addiction or massive issues across our country. We really just demand our most prominent Black athletes to speak out. Justin, I'm curious.
Absolutely.
Which side you're on. I don't know if it's one or the other, but there are a few who believe that their platform will overshadow them when they return, and there are others who believe that you can't control anything else that might return, any other thing that might distract. So the best you can do is go continue to create that generational wealth while also hoping you can maximize and amplify your voice using the platform. Do you think one is a smarter choice than the other?
Yeah, and honestly, Sarah, that's a really, really great question, but it's a great question with like a complex answer. I've gone back and forth in a lot of ways. Like, do I want to see basketball again? I won't speak for you all, but I feel comfortable in probably speaking for you. It's like, yeah, none of us would be working here if we didn't want to see basketball eventually come back, and I know we do. But my thing is, when basketball eventually comes back, which I believe it will in Orlando, I think they will use that platform to make a powerful statement in some regard. But, you know, I look at it from a health point of view. You know, we're at the point where we expect these guys to speak up and have a moral compass more than, you know, people who are put in these positions to actually make these decisions. And think about it like this. If they're going to be staying in Florida for up to 3 months, they're playing basketball during a global pandemic. And one, this country has said that, you know, we have under control, but I think everybody knows that we don't. And we don't really know who and what and when these limitations around the bubble are going to exist. And they're doing this all during a period of global social unrest. So should they be playing? It's really hard for me to wave that definitive yes flag, because I feel so uneasy about a lot of things in the world nowadays. And playing basketball is one of them.
You know, as a black man, I'm skeptical, but I'm also optimistic as I look at our future. And what's going on, Justin, as a black man yourself, I'm sure you kind of battle with both those sentiments as well. From one black man to another, how are you processing this? Because as a 37-year-old, it does feel different in ways, because it's become more mainstream. It's on more of a platform. There are more allies that don't look like us, which is starting to impact some change we've never seen. But in one hand, it feels like, oh, is this just going to be a fad? And when everything returns back to normal, it's no longer in vogue to say Black Lives Matter. It's no longer in vogue to study Juneteenth and what it means. So that's where the skepticism comes into play. How are you approaching this different time in our world?
To be perfectly honest with you, man, I take it a day at a time. I talk to my grandmother a lot. I'm blessed to be able to still have my grandmother around. She recently turned 89 years old, and she was the one that really opened me up to a lot of the way the world was before I was born, the way the world is as I've been coming of age, and the way the world is right now as a 34-year-old black man and myself. And she says it herself, that she's never been in a time like this. And my grandmother was born in 1931 in South Carolina. So you can imagine what the world looked like to her for the majority of her life. I think you said it in the question, man. I'm cautiously optimistic. I'd be a fool to say, you know, this is like Ferguson in 2014 or Baltimore in 2015, because this does feel different. I believe we're seeing a lot of traditions being torn away. And I think in this country, we use the word tradition to mask racial tradition. And I think those are changes. You can see with monuments coming down, with streets being renamed. But it's really going to take, if we want to see, it's really going to take a structural and a systematic change. It's really going to take a holistic change. And I believe that is on the horizon. I see it happening in very small parts now, but I am cautiously optimistic that this country cannot continue to rest on the laurels that it has for hundreds of years, because resting on those laurels for hundreds of years has gotten us in the position that we are right now. And I think if that's what it took for this country's eyes to be opened up, then unfortunately lives and bloodshed had to happen. But if you look over the course of world history, but definitely American history, this is no different than any other landmark watershed moment.
Spain and Company, Sarah Spain, Jordan Cornette, Justin Tinsley of The Undefeated joins us on the Shell Penzel Performance Line. Justin, back to the NBA, I'm curious if you think there should be very specific demands from these players. I had the idea of taking on the intention of share the mic now and potentially having contracts with the media that, you know, 5 minutes of LeBron James has to be paired with 5 minutes of some sort of amplified activist voice that they decide on as an NBA or as a league or as a player that they want to give a space to, so it doesn't get drowned out by coverage of the sport itself. But I'm wondering, beyond the actual activism before or during the game, should they demand, in order to return to play, some sort of major asks of ownership and front offices and more representation?
Absolutely, Sarah. I think if you're going to send these players to this bubble that I really don't know what it's going to look like, but let's just say bubble because that's the word that people have been using. If you're really going to send these players to this bubble for 3 months during a global pandemic and risk their health, I think the least you can do is ask ownership to make some type of legitimate, concrete, you know, long-term commitment to these issues that affect the majority of what the league looks like. I don't think that's too much of a grandiose ask at all. I believe that if the NBA and compared to other leagues and businesses we see, they are more progressive than a lot. But if you're really going to, you know, hang your hat on this, we're the progressive league, we're the quote unquote woke league, then you gotta be willing to not only put your money where your mouth is, but your actions, because your players are doing it, and your players can't be the only one speaking up on these issues. Again, that's what, you know, allyship looks like. You know, it's not up to Black people to be like, hey, look, this has been going on for X amount of years, this is messed up. We know it, because we've been going through it. Now it's going to take, if you really do give a damn about the well-being of your players, and not just physical health, but this is mental health as well, then I don't think that's too much of an ask at all to look at ownership and be like, okay, you know, put your money where your mouth is, and let's put the actions where you say your heart is.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I am hoping and guessing that that's probably the way that they'll end up going. Thanks for the time, Justin. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me on. Truly enjoyed it.